This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In his budget speech this week, Governor Phil Scott unveiled an ambitious plan to restrict the growth of local school budgets. Under his proposal, there could be no increase at all in any local school budgets next year. The state would mandate that these budgets be level funded. In addition, future budget growth would be linked to changes in student population. For instance, if the number of students declined by 2%, then the local budget would have to be cut by at least 2%. The governor says it's time for bold action on this issue.
Believe me when I say, I know these are incredibly strong measures, but over the last 20 years, student counts have continuously dropped. Costs have continued to rise faster than our ability to pay, and property taxes have become one of the biggest contributors to our crisis of affordability.
The governor also wants to delay when communities vote on their school budgets, moving that date from town meeting day in March to May 23rd to give local school boards time to adjust to a new level-funded budget. The governor wants to take the savings from this plan to increase funding on early education, child care, higher education, and teacher retirement programs. The goal is to fold pre-K and higher education spending into the state's education fund so that all education funding is in one place. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to take a close look at the governor's plan, and in our first segment, we'll talk with Administration Secretary Suzanne Young. Great to have you here, Secretary Young.
It's nice to be here. Thank you, Bob.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What do you think about this plan to mandate that all school boards adopt a level-funded budget next year, a plan that would also restrict growth in future years? Will it hurt the quality of education in Vermont, or is it a necessary step to bring school spending under control? What are your thoughts about this plan? Something the legislature is going to have to consider in the next few weeks. 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So, Secretary Young, explain to us why the governor feels that having the state mandate, not suggest, not encourage, but mandate a cap on local school spending is a good idea.
Well, thank you for that question, Bob. The governor's budget is indeed a bold approach to addressing the three goals that he has set for his administration, strengthening the economy, making Vermont more affordable, and protecting vulnerable Vermonters. And to answer that question, I'd like to back up a little bit to some of the statistics that he has been looking at and what he has heard on during his campaign that have pretty much verified that. From 2000 to 2010, the number of 25 to 45-year-olds in Vermont have decreased by 30,000. Since 2010, we've lost 16,000 workers, and that downward trend continues. And we're losing 2,300 more every year, six fewer workers than we've had today. And we spend $1.6 billion annually on a K through 12 education system, about $19,000 for students. And that does not include pre-K and higher ed. We spend 25% of our entire budget on the K through 12 system. And the governor's view is that investment in early education and in higher education is going to help us not only reduce the property tax burden, but will also spread out from early ed to pre-K through we call it cradle through career, spending those resources on a continuum that is going to bring a better outcome and is going to actually be better for the children, better for the teachers, and better for Vermonters in the long haul, and will help to grow our economy, which is one of our ultimate goals.
In his inaugural address, Governor Scott laid out his philosophy for governing in the state of Vermont, and he said, this is a quote, "I worked for more than 30 years in construction, and what I learned was the best feedback always came from those who were in the trenches. State government should be no different. I believe that our frontline employees, who directly engage with Vermonters every day, have valuable knowledge about what's working and what needs improvement. That's why I'm calling for every process, every procedure, every system, and every government mandate to be looked at through a new lens, theirs." So what do you say to those folks who wonder, did he mean what he said in light of this new mandate to cap local school spending? And if he meant it, why didn't he consult more with local school budgets and local school boards?
Well, this is about setting limits that reflect Vermonters' ability to pay. And across state government and school budgets, which both receive statewide funding, they all must be part of that equation, Bob. And although the schools are being asked to level fund at fiscal year 2017 levels, they certainly have the flexibility and the local control in determining how they are going to reach level funding.
So if we look back at town meeting day in 2016, we'd see that roughly 90% of all school budgets were approved by local voters the first time around. So do you trust voters and school boards to make the right decision when it comes to budgets at the local level? And if you do trust them, then why are you capping their budgets?
We do trust them to make the decisions. We're asking them to put their budgets on pause, to put the process on pause, and to level fund for FY 2018 and to start making the investments that level funding will help us invest to improve the early ed, the pre-K, and the higher ed. What we're trying to do, Bob, is we have a pre-K budget that is growing, and it is at $1.6 billion, and we have very little that leads up to the K through 12 education in terms of spending for early ed and in terms of what we invest in higher ed. What we're trying to do is sort of stop the growth at that $1.6 billion level, start to make investments around the edges, and smooth out a system so that it is serving all Vermont children from pre-K, early ed through higher ed to create a better outcome, to create a system where the teachers are going to benefit because the children at an early age have received the education and the preparation they need for kindergarten through 12, and that we are producing students out of high school who can continue in some form of higher education and be able to fill the workforce and to be able to meet the need that the businesses are telling us they have, but they're not finding a workforce in Vermont to help them create our economy, build their businesses. So in the end, it is going to be a win for all.
So if this plan goes through, what happens if a town refuses to go along with this? What kind of enforcement power do you need, and what would happen to that town? How would they be penalized?
Well, we certainly would have this conversation with the legislature, but if they did not level fund, I would expect that there would be an offset on the education payment that they would receive from the state. It just has to be in order to accrue the savings that we're hoping to save from this.
And in terms of having the legislature deal with this issue, we've got town meeting day coming up. You've got a lot of school boards putting the final touches on their budgets right now if they haven't completed it. When does the legislature need to act on this in order to have it work for this year?
We need the legislature to act right away on this, Bob. And at a minimum, we need them to commit to passing a bill that extends the school budget votes till May 23rd is a date that we have picked. And the reason for that, we've been hearing in the State House, and we have certainly been hearing from many communities that this is creating too much uncertainty for clerks, for school boards in terms of what do we do now? What do we do this week? Do we warn our meetings now? And the warning, the statutory warning deadline is upon us next week. So let's take a breath, take a pause, extend the school district votes to May. The legislature feels it needs more time to consider the governor's proposals in depth. We appreciate that. This will give them time to address in depth the governor's proposals and the impacts. It will give school boards time to think about how they would level fund their budgets, and it would give a greater number of Vermonters, an opportunity to weigh in May on the budgets and the governor's proposals.
Got a number of listeners who would like to weigh in on this issue. So let's start off with Dave down in Brattleboro. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thank you. I'm a school board member and have been involved in school budgets for years. And it's been become pretty clear to us in Brattleboro that poverty is the thing that's really driving up our cost. In fact, we added a social worker to our school budget this year for the 700 and some kids that we have. And I look back at the 6 years that the Democrats controlled the legislature, and I don't see an awful lot of effort that was made to try and control poverty despite a lot of evidence and a lot of lobbying and a lot of emphasis. The pre-K bill that was passed is not reaching the lower-income students, the families that it was intended to reach. The dual enrollment bill for kids to be in high school and earn college credits at the same time is not reaching them effectively. And Act 46, which we've seen 58 districts, I think, have schools have merged, but 66 of them are still stalled or voted no or gave up or haven't even started. And that's adding another $10 billion just this year to pay for the tax incentives to encourage boards to do it. I haven't seen or I'm not aware of a single bill to try and make the human services or the education agencies work together with private and nonprofit organizations to try to get families out of poverty. And I don't think that the Democratic legislators should be surprised that there's been that this has been the response. And I think a lot of fair-minded Vermonters, especially if they don't understand exactly how this might affect their local schools and can't get some sort of a waiver if it's going to have a really negative effect, I think a lot of Vermonters are going to look at this as worth a try. And I think that the Democrats kind of earned it.
Okay.
And,
Dave, thanks very much for your comments. Your thoughts?
Thank you, Dave. This proposal does start to address the issues that we are having with poverty issues and with children who may not be as advantaged and have access to quality child care at an early age, to have access to quality early education. The governor's proposal includes $9.6 million to address early education in FY18. And the goal is to start to tease out some of those programs that are now currently in the Agency of Human Services and to really get a handle on all of the resources that we are putting into early ed outside of the Ed Fund and really create a robust early ed and pre-K program that is going to create, I think, a better situation, and the governor believes a better education experience for both those students once they hit K-12 and for the teachers who do such hard work providing education to our children.
So we got this email, and it says, as a parent of two preschool-age children, why do I want to stay in a state that is thinking of passing legislation that would mandate the stagnation or decline of our school system? Name me a K-12 school in the state that will improve its educational outcomes by level funding its budget. This is short-term thinking that will not improve Vermont in the long run. What do you say to that person?
Well, I disagree that this is short-term thinking, but I do agree this is a short-term pause on the budgets. It is a one-year level funding proposal. So, again, it is one that in the long run is going to benefit everybody. It is going to create higher quality schools and a higher quality education across the board. And it is going to help us deal with some of the issues that we are currently facing. I think teachers out there that we have heard from would agree we have a very, very difficult outcomes from our opiate crisis. We have some very difficult situations when kids come into kindergarten who haven't had the quality child care or early ed opportunities that others have had.
We got this email from a high school teacher in central Vermont. I am deeply troubled by Governor Scott's draconian education budget proposal. Aside from the troubling numbers, I'm astonished by his blatant disregard towards educators and school administrators. Seems to me that Governor Scott could work on his listening skills by actually engaging with teachers, by visiting schools and talking with local school boards. Do you understand why so many teachers and more importantly, local school board members are so upset with this proposal?
Well, we understand that school boards have been working very, very hard over the years to build their budgets, and that they have put, you know, hours and hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours, into building budgets over the years that meet their taxpayers' needs, and that they are understandably very concerned that we are asking them now, after they've been in the budget process for the last few months, to please stop and take a breath and start looking at your budget as a level-funded budget. There's absolutely no disrespect intended towards the teachers or to the school boards. We have a unique opportunity this year. We have an urgent need this year. The unique opportunity is that the teachers' contracts are opening. For the most part, the majority of them are opening because of the Affordable Care Act. There is an opportunity there to ask the teachers to pay the same percentage of a premium that we're asking of state employees and that private employers typically require. And so we are there's an opportunity there that we should be taking advantage of. More importantly, we have an urgency to this issue, and this is not as the result of the governor not listening. I think that this proposal arises out of the governor listening very carefully on his campaign to Vermonters and to Vermonters who can no longer afford their property taxes, to Vermonters who are moving in with their family members because they cannot afford to own their own home, and to Vermonters who you know don't have the skills to get the jobs, the young children who do not have the educational opportunities. And so this really is a realignment of priorities. This is a realignment so that we can meet the needs of all Vermonters. And we are not asking the education system or the teachers or the boards to do anything more than we're asking for in the state government on the general fund side.
Let's talk to Peggy, who's calling from Charlotte. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a teacher in the Vermont school systems for over 15 years, and this totally floored me hearing this. Historically, teachers have been the scapegoats, the retirement system, taking money for taking care of other fiscal problems that the state couldn't take care of. And we have one of the highest student achievements in the nation. It's showing that the cost is worth it if the school boards are approving it. And we teachers are supporting the future of this state. And this really just is a personal blow, and I do take it personally, and I know all my colleagues are pretty upset about this, too.
Okay, Peggy, thanks for your phone call. Secretary Young, what do you say to Peggy?
Well, I say to Peggy, thank you very much for your service to our learners and our students and our children. And this is not intended, as I said before, to be a personal blow to teachers or a reflection on the hard work that they're doing. We have heard, and the governor has heard loud and clear, the challenges that you face in the classroom. And the challenges, as the caller from Brattleboro noted, a lot of them tend to come from the experiences our children are having before they get to school. The governor's proposal is designed to help with that issue, to put some more resources into that part of a child's development and that child, that age group, so that when they do get to kindergarten, they are better prepared to have a better learning experience that we know the teachers are absolutely capable and provide to our children in such a fantastic manner.
Well, what kind of reception is the governor's plan getting at the State House and by local school boards all across the state? In our next segment, we'll explore these questions. Administration Secretary Suzanne Young, many thanks for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much, Bob.
This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott is proposing a state mandate to require that all school boards in the state level fund their budgets next year, and the plan includes restrictions in future years. Today on Vermont Edition, we're taking a close look at the governor's plan. With us now to discuss it, House Education Chairman David Sharp and Nicole Mace, who is the Executive Director of the Vermont School Boards Association. Great to have you on the program. Thanks for being part of this.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bob.
And some listeners might be wondering, so why are the guests today on at different times? Why didn't we have these three guests on together to have a back-and-forth conversation about the governor's plan? Well, there is a simple answer. The governor's office did not want to be on with both Representative Sharp and Director Mace because these two guests have offered criticisms of the governor's plan, and the Scott administration felt the panel would be out of balance, essentially one proponent and two opponents. Well, we chose Representative Sharp and Director Mace to be part of the program today because they represent an important part of Vermont's educational community, lawmakers and Vermont school board members. Not because of their particular point of view, and we regret the administration's decision. But we do have two guests with us right now who are willing to be on the program in whatever capacity we could set up. I thank you for your flexibility and participation. Representative Sharp, let's start with you. Overall, what do you think of this plan?
So I'd like to go back to his inaugural address and what he was looking at, to try to look at this from his perspective. So we know we had a problem in the general fund, mostly generated from Medicaid. Why do we have a Medicaid problem? The state's doing well. Wages are up. Unemployment is down. And there's probably fewer people on Medicaid. Well, there may be. The problem is that we're doing well. And the federal government has this reimbursement rate called the FMAP, so they reimburse a certain percentage of Medicaid expenses to the state. Because we are doing so well relative to other states in the country, the federal government reduced the reimbursement rate. I don't know the exact numbers, but let's say from around 57% to 52%. That creates a much higher expense in Medicaid that we have to deal with. So the governor looks at that, and he has to solve a problem in the general fund. And in his inaugural address, he said he's not going to raise taxes or fees in order to solve this problem. I went home from that address and spoke to my wife, and I said, education fund. He has no choice but to go to the education fund to solve his general fund problem. And so that's what generated this issue. He dumped a lot of costs into the education fund. He dumped some general fund money, but left a $50 million problem in the education fund. And that's where he needed to try to address the issue of the imbalance now in the education fund. So he did so by mandating what schools could spend.
If you'd like to join the conversation today, you can still give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about the governor's plan to mandate level-funded budgets all across the state next year, 1-800-639-2211. Representative Sharp, what about the administration's basic argument? We're already spending $1.6 billion on education. The number of students has declined pretty dramatically in the last 15 or 20 years, and yet costs have been going up. They say this is simply not sustainable.
So voters vote budgets, and voters support education in our schools across the state on a huge majority. They do want property tax relief. We rely very heavily on property taxes to fund our education. We rely about 66%. The national average is about 40%. So that's the issue that we're dealing with.
Well, do you feel like this is a system that is broken that has to be fixed?
So during the governor's campaign, he talked about reducing costs in education, and he used the PICUS report that the legislature authorized a couple of years ago as a part of Act 46. There are people in the state that think we spend too much on education, and I think that they are advising the governor on this issue. The PICUS people have done these adequacy studies in more than 20 states across the country. They're well respected. They said we spend about the right amount of money in K through 12 education. We spend about $30 million too much in administration. Our Act 46 school districts have already begun to address those administrative costs. And we spend about $140 million too much in special education. I was disappointed that the governor's, both in his inaugural address and his budget, were devoid of any mention of how we might deal with special education costs.
Nicole Mace, I've got to believe that many school boards are in the process of finalizing their budgets right now, if they haven't already done so. So how would the governor's plan affect these local school boards?
Well, I think, thanks, Bob. First, I'd like to just start by saying that the School Boards Association and school boards across the state share Governor Scott's goals of greater affordability, strengthening the economy, and protecting Vermont's most vulnerable. But the proposals outlined by the governor this week are not the right path to get us there. Our education system relies on a partnership between state and local elected officials. Progress on shared goals must be accomplished through collaboration and trust. And the governor's proposal sent a message, pretty strong message, that local boards and communities can't be trusted to create and approve budgets that respond to our fiscal and educational challenges. And trust goes both ways. Folks were surprised and caught off guard by the governor's proposals this week. As Representative Sharp said, he essentially makes school boards responsible for closing a $35 million general fund gap and funding $16 million in new initiatives. So not surprisingly, we've heard from, and I know the governor's office, and I'm sure Representative Sharp has too, from school board officials around the state who say if the governor wanted level-funded budgets, he should have sent signals to that effect well before the budget process had concluded. And that's where we are now. Warnings, the warning period starts today. It ends on February 5th. Bringing this proposal forward after most boards have completed the difficult task of budgeting shows disregard for the elected officials overseeing Vermont's public education system.
So in the first segment of the program, Administration Secretary Suzanne Young said, we trust voters, we trust school boards, but it's time to take a pause. Spending is out of control. Mm-hmm. We need to divert some of this money to important programs like early education, higher education, childcare. So she said they do trust school board members.
Well, I would respectfully ask that a different approach be taken than the one that was taken. And with respect to the notion of needing more time, again, asking for this work to have been done in November or December would have been the right time. This spring, you know, this town meeting day, voters in 57 towns are going to be asked to vote on Act 46 merger proposals. These unified districts are intended to lead to more affordable, effective education systems. It seems to be aligned with the goals of this administration, but it's not clear to me how this proposal will impact those votes on town meeting day, which is a concrete action step that boards have taken in those communities intended to lead to more affordability. School boards are also engaged in collective bargaining agreements, as Secretary Young alluded to. Everyone in the state is bargaining. These are difficult conversations that are time-consuming and require focus. And if boards have to go back to the drawing board and develop new budgets that may result in serious layoffs within their system, I'm worried about the impact that has on a collective bargaining conversation that really could result in significant savings for taxpayers.
I'd like to respond to the pause language that was used. This proposal, as I understand it, and we don't have a bill, so it's a moving target. But as I understand it, is requiring school districts to level fund their budgets according to 2017 numbers. However, there's a 5% escape clause. So the December letter from the Commissioner of Taxes said that they expect a 3.2% increase in spending overall. So school districts can go ahead and vote the budget that they voted. We'll have overwhelming support, I suspect, for the budgets that town school boards have put together. And it will reflect a 3.2% increase, well within the 5% allowable safety valve. And so what that does for 2018 is blows the budget out of the water with regard to covering general fund expenditures that the governor has put in place. Then 2019, they cannot use that increase of the 3.2%. They're back to 2017 numbers. This is a mandate from the governor, and what it does is locks in place for in perpetuity, not a pause, in perpetuity for low-spending communities to continue to spend low and high-spending communities to continue to spend high. The logic escapes me.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who is calling from Richmond. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. A couple of observations. It's early for me. I don't know all the details of what the consequences. Everybody's talking about the consequences. But it seems like we're doing this to go back to, you know, we're restarting this year's budget process, which doesn't make sense. Again, the problems have been there ongoing, and to try to rectify them all within a year when we've already done lots of work, again, it seems backwards. Concern about the fact that we're treating pre-K and higher ed as investments, but now the K through 12 are expenditures. The fact that the governor is taking a very one-size-fits-all kind of a meat-cleaver approach, when we haven't been able to incorporate, what innovations are school districts taking that are proving to save money, and how can that be pushed throughout the rest of the system? It seems like we're changing horses midstream, and we have no idea how deep the water is. I agree that cost control has to be part of it, but to assume that nobody's aware of that or trying to do anything about that kind of doesn't take into account reality. My first perception is concern.
Okay, John, we really appreciate your phone call. Nicole, I wanted to go back. You talked about the Act 46 votes that would be coming up on town meeting day. Were you suggesting that maybe those votes would be put off until May as well, or would folks vote on that on town meeting day and then come back in May to vote on the school budget? What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, under the law, voters vote on a merger plan on the date specified in the report that was approved by the State Board of Education. So in December and January, the State Board approved 10 separate proposals for votes to be held on town meeting day. So my expectation would be that those votes would continue to be held on town meeting day. However, I think the potential for a lot of confusion is real in terms of how those votes might relate to significant damaging cuts that might be made within a district in response to the requirement for level funded budgets. I think it jeopardizes the voting process, and it makes it more difficult for boards who really need to be spending the next 6 weeks communicating with their communities about why these mergers make sense or why they might be the right approach to respond to Act 46. They're not going to have any time to have those conversations with their communities. Instead, they're going to be back to the drawing board responding to this requirement.
Today in the program, we're looking at the governor's plan to mandate that all school boards in the state have a level-funded budget next year. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, House Education Chairman David Sharp and Nicole Mays, who's the Executive Director of the Vermont School Boards Association. And we're looking at the governor's plan to mandate that all school budgets be level funded next year. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Representative Sharp, if lawmakers don't approve of the governor's approach, I think I see what's coming. And that would be that the administration will say, hey, we've got a $50 million budget gap. if you're not going to support our plan, then you better come up with a plan of your own.
Yeah, and it's a huge challenge. I hope that the governor stays with his pledge during the campaign to work collaboratively. I would have liked to have this conversation about education before his budget address. I even asked to meet with the governor, and that discussion didn't happen. But going forward, we need to have a discussion about how we're going to solve the Medicaid problem and what we're going to do about preschool and what we're going to do about the state college financial situation, which is dire. These are all and where I thought we had real common ground was in career and technical education. One of my other thoughts is that, you know, if the governor is going to tell school districts what they can spend and he's going to inject himself into the bargaining process about what teachers get paid, why doesn't – it seems like he just wants to run the school system from Montpelier. Why doesn't he just propose one school district for the state of Vermont like Hawaii has?
And, Nicole, the governor is suggesting, and Secretary Young today, that their fallback immediately might be, okay, you might not be able to pass a bill that sets up the level-funded mandate and the May 23rd date. That might not happen. But at the very least – they would like lawmakers to pass the delay until May 23rd, and that gives everybody some time to think about what approach might be taken. What do you think of that approach?
Well, it reminds me a little bit of where we were at last year with the allowable growth threshold and boards operating under tremendous uncertainty and communities during the budget process in terms of what budget are they going to be voting on, how to have that conversation with their community. So I think introducing chaos into a budget season 2 years in a row is not useful in terms of making progress to the goals that we all share. I agree with Representative Sharp. I would have appreciated an opportunity to have conversations with the administration months ago about a way that we could work together to make progress on the work that's already underway, think creatively about options for achieving these goals that we haven't thought of yet, but to have this conversation now and throughout the next few months when boards already have full plates and a lot of work underway that will actually translate into real savings for taxpayers, it's just not the right approach.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Nancy in Brookfield. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much, Bob. Can you hear me all right?
We sure can.
Okay, great. My question is, I'm an educator myself, but I'm appreciating all this information. I'm new to Vermont. Can you explain how the level funding might potentially adversely affect poor communities versus more advantaged communities financially? I'm not sure that is clear to me, and I'm just wondering how that may roll out.
Okay, Nancy, thanks for your phone call. Representative Sharp, I thought you kind of alluded to this, that if this program went into effect, low-spending towns are kind of locked into low-spending, and high-spending towns have much more of a cushion.
Yes,
is that correct?
That's the way I read it, and I think that you know, with the dictates from the administration and the plan going forward in terms of only allowing budgets to go up or down based on the student population, if you lose students, your budget goes down. I think it returns us to pre-Brigham situation. It's something that the Supreme Court found unconstitutional in 97, and it wouldn't surprise me if we have a legal challenge to that part of his proposal.
Let's talk to Andrea, who is calling from Huntington. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I want to thank Dave Sharp for explaining the interrelationship of the funds. First off, I hadn't realized some of that information. I am on a school board in a small town with a 25% free and reduced rate. One item that hasn't been mentioned is keeping up the physical plant in the communities. In our case, We had a level-funded budget 2 years ago, and we had cut our budget last year. And we have, in previous years, reduced our staff, our teaching staff, so that we don't have a large cushion of extraneous people to be eliminating. We just passed in November a bond issue to replace a 50-year-old failing ventilation and heating system. And how we're supposed to level fund a budget and pay for a bond issue, which is under bid right now and is slated to begin in June, I know we aren't the only community with issues as far as that. I know Shelburne is working on their building, and, of course, Williston. So I was wondering how things like that might be handled in this level-funded, because you can't have the children in either an unsafe or an unhealthy environment.
Andrea, that's a great question. And we should say, you know, in the first year, we want to make clear, the first year, the governor is suggesting that all budgets be level funded. And then in later years, out into the future for forever, there'll be a link between student enrollment and the growth in the budget. And if student enrollment in some areas goes down by a percent or two or three, then the budget has to go down by at least that much. So this is really a long-term plan, Nicole. And what about Andrea's concerns that how do you deal with bond issues under these circumstances?
I think one unfortunate outgrowth of years of fiscal pressure on school districts has been deferred maintenance. And there has not been state aid for school construction for quite some time now. And as a result, school boards, when faced with a difficult decision to cut a program that will impact children versus delaying putting that new roof on the building, more often than not, programming stays intact and maintenance is deferred. But you can only go so long in terms of deferring that maintenance until, as the caller said, you have to take action. So this proposal doesn't take into account facility needs. It doesn't take into account the fact that you may have students with special needs move into your district that require additional investments and supports. It doesn't take into account the fact that some districts that don't operate a school and pay tuition may have new families move in where you have to pay tuition. So the lack of flexibility within this type of an approach really does disadvantage particularly smaller districts and districts that don't have a lot of room within their budgets.
Representative Sharp, tell us how this is going to play out. Nicole said, you know, by February 5th, that's sort of a drop-dead date. Then for local school budgets, that's the 30-day warning period before town meeting day. Do you think your committee is going to give its approval to the governor's plan by February 5th?
Well, I think what the governor wants first and most is the delay till May 23rd. If we were to do that, we would have to have a bill out next week. I don't foresee just reality. I don't foresee how we can do that. I've worked really hard on the affordable growth issue last year and on the pre-K pupil count this year to get a bill out quickly. Even the simplest of bills, getting them out that quickly is extraordinarily difficult.
So how does this unfold? It sounds like you're saying trying to get this bill out, even just the delay to May 23rd by February 5th, looks like it'd be very, very difficult, if not impossible.
Right.
Would you even support a bill that did the delay to May 23rd?
I don't think so. I think that school districts have worked pretty hard to put together budgets that address the educational needs for their pupils. I think those have gone to the printer for the most part. They're going to be warned, and voters are going to have before them on town meeting day a vote. And with the 5% allowable cushion, I don't see how it's workable.
We're almost out of time, but Nicole, the idea of waiting for a couple of months, would that help local school boards level fund their budget, or is that simply not enough time?
No, because I think it creates a whole host of other complications that I alluded to earlier. You know, school boards are working tremendously hard to comply with Act 46. They've accomplished something of, I think, historic magnitude in terms of the number of mergers that have occurred under that law. They're attempting to pull off similarly historic feats by bargaining a transition to new health plans. So we really urge Governor Scott and his administration to stand with school boards as they navigate this and forge a partnership based on mutual understanding of the situation on the ground and the needs of Vermont communities.
Well, as we just heard, lawmakers will be taking a close look at this plan in the next few weeks. We'll try to follow this issue very closely. Many thanks to our guest today, House Education Chairman David Sharp, and Nicole Mace, who is the Executive Director of the Vermont School Boards Association. Many thanks for being on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's our program for today. On Monday, we're going to celebrate the work of Vermont author Howard Frank Mosier. In his fictional Kingdom County, he brought to life the culture and landscape of the Northeast Kingdom. If you want to share your thoughts about Howard Frank Mosier, send a note to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and then listen live Monday at noon. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.